Hey guys, Mark from the GAK.co.uk Guitar Shop podcast here. Just dropped in at the beginning of the podcast to remind you all that if you want the inside scoop on any news or any deals that we've got going on at the shop, do follow us on Twitter at GAK_co_UK. You can also follow the podcast guys individually. You can follow me at Mark_random. You can follow Matt at Matt_nightsy. You can follow Jay at JAYBN1. And you can follow Joe at Joseph_900. Hello and welcome to the GAK.co.uk Guitar Shop podcast. I'm your host, Mark Packham, who is with me this evening.
Hello, my name's Jay. I'm the assistant manager here in the guitar store.
Hello, my name's Matt, and I'm the manager.
What? Hello, I'm Joe, and I'm here for bass.
We've just eaten a lot of pizza, and it's definitely put a different spin on the
we've actually
intro.
Already done the intro.
We've started the podcast, and then the pizza arrived.
Can you are we just going to see which one's the best one?
I think we should release it as a B-side.
Oh, that's a good idea.
Maybe I'll put the entire start of the other podcast on the end of this podcast.
That's a good idea.
Yeah, but maybe I'll put some crazy effects on it. It was all right. How is everyone?
Good.
Yeah, great.
Good. I just had a really nice pizza.
Yeah, it was really good
pizza. Did anyone else have a really nice pizza recently?
Yeah, I seem to remember a time when I ate a nice pizza.
Yeah, I think I had a good pizza.
There's nothing better than a good pizza.
This was an exceptional pizza.
Oh, no, wait. Sorry. Two good pizzas.
Two good pizzas, yeah.
Two good pizzas.
Did anyone else finish theirs?
Yes.
Yeah.
I did not finish mine.
I finished mine, yeah.
Anyway.
Record time.
How has this week been? How's life in the guitar shop?
Good. Busy.
It's fine.
Yeah. Lots of fun.
What's new?
Paisley 65 Deluxe.
Yes, totally very nice. For people who don't know what they are.
Paisley is a very, very nice colour, which is
it's
usually...
It's not colour, is it?
It's a wallpaper, but you know.
Yeah. It's your best guitar.
And also my guitar, yeah. It matches my pink Paisley.
Are you going to get one so it matches? Oh, dude, you got it. No, you've got the Morgan set up now.
I want it to match. Basically, what I really want is a dedicated music room that I can fill with loads of stuff that I might not...
Everything's Paisley.
What wallpaper are you going to put up?
Oh, my. You have to do
imagine
that.
But imagine if I put Paisley wallpaper up and then sprayed it with nitro and lacquered my walls.
That'd be quite weird. So for those not in the know, Fender have basically done an FSR run of 65 Deluxes, is that right?
Yeah, in pink Paisley. Have they done a blue Paisley?
Yeah, blue flower.
Blue flower, pink Paisley.
I know that one of the guys that works for Gibson has two Strats and two Tellies, both in the matching pink and blues, and he has the original Fender Paisley amps they did like 5 or 6 years ago.
Oh, really?
Oh, wicked.
Yeah, he loves Paisley.
Wasn't there Paisley Blues Junior? Was there Paisley Blues Junior?
No,
there was a black Paisley Blues Junior.
Oh, that's what I'm thinking.
The problem is that if you're gonna go to the effort of doing Paisley, make it pink or blue.
Yeah. Is the wallpaper underneath actually pink, or is it silver?
No, silver. I don't think they use wallpaper on the amps, but they did on the original guitars and the Japanese ones in the 80s.
Yeah, because they did the FSR black Paisley Telly and Strat, I think.
Yeah, it's just a print.
A couple of years ago, and it was just a print. It wasn't actual paper, which is a shame.
It's got to make you wonder why they don't just have those in the catalogue all the time. Like, people just will always want to buy pink Paisley.
Well, but you can say that about a lot of things. I mean, you know, like, we've been talking a lot recently about the those new classic series guitars that came out. You know, the Strats, Jazzmasters and Jaguars.
Yeah.
You know, that Strat, with the classic series Strat, with matching headstock in surf green and Daphne blue. I mean,
yes.
Yeah,
I sold another one of those today. How cool is that guitar?
I sold the FSR Redwood today. Yeah. And it made me think back. Do you remember that one we had in the store that had the hole all the way through it?
Yeah, it was...
Where the nail, it was the old barn door.
For
people who don't know, it's part of the Fender Reclaimed Wood series.
Yeah,
is that what they're calling them?
Exactly.
And it's basically wood that Fender have managed to get hold of, and each piece comes with its own story. So I think the old ones where it was a late 19th century barn, wasn't it?
Yeah, yeah.
And that's why it had a hole through it where a nail had been, because it was a floorboard or something. What were these new red ones? Where were they?
The redwood
ones. Where were they from?
I think just... I don't know, because there wasn't anything in the case, which I thought was a shame, because it'd be nice to see the tree.
Wasn't there one? I guess it answers that old question of if a tree falls in the woods and no one's there to hear it.
Do Fender reclaim
it? Do Fender reclaim it and turn it into a guitar?
Clearly they do.
The answer is yes.
I think it was part of a decommissioned bridge. Or something like that.
I don't know about this one.
No, they did do one previously that was a decommissioned bridge. We've had a bridge and a barn, but I don't know about this one.
I know the last run they did, there was a redwood one, and then the redwood one never happened because they couldn't get hold of the woods. They called it something else.
Well, redwood is, as far as I'm aware, redwood is like a very, very protected because it only grows in certain areas of the US.
They couldn't have chopped one down because
they're super old. It has to be from something, I think. I think the original plan was they were going to do something from a bridge, and then when they actually got that wood, it wasn't very good, so they found another source,
another bridge. Can you just block this one instead?
Yeah, just knock this bridge down. It's fine. It's made of wood. It won't be any good anyway.
I'm really looking forward to the...
I feel really sorry for the people the other side of that bridge.
Yeah, they can never go home again.
I'm really looking forward to that Golden Gate, the FSR Golden Gate.
Just made out of old iron girders. Yeah. Just when they're like redoing the Golden Gate Bridge.
Do you remember when Gibson did their Smartwood series?
Yeah.
No.
What was I remember that? Banana wood. If you've got banana wood, Les Pauls.
So what was the idea behind the smart wood? Was it to just use different...
Experimentation.
Was it to, renewable...
I think that was the idea, wasn't it? It was supposed to be using sources that weren't necessarily going to damage the environment.
What was banana wood like? Did it have any tonal qualities?
It was actually a little bit before my time, but the reason I know about the series is about 4 or 5 years ago, someone went to sell one. They went, oh, I've got one of those banana wood Les Pauls. I was like, you've definitely just made that up.
They did.
Gibson seemed like the wrong company to be doing that. Like, if Fender were making weird woods, it would be all right, but Gibson's kind of, they're so reliant on mahogany to get that sound.
I just thought of something... weird. Imagine if they made a custom shop Fender that came in an unzippable banana gig bag.
Oh yeah,
that'd be quite banana wood guitar, but in one of those banana holders.
Like Fender,
banana,
if you're listening.
Banana hammocks.
Or the case looks like one of those little plastic banana holders.
I just looked it up just so. I mean, I think I'm probably the only person who was interested. But
in the tree,
the redwood. Yeah, we're going back to the redwood stuff. This is the GAK guitar shop and also
environmental podcast.
Yeah. They are native to California, which is there's the really big one, which is only on the western slopes of the Sierra Nevada range. And then there's another... shut up. It does get a bit interesting.
I'm enjoying this.
There's also another...
Joe's making us sound like we actually know what we're talking about.
I'm literally reading it off Wikipedia.
Yeah.
there's another species of it which grows in Northern California. And then there is a third species that... was thought to be so rare in China that they were thought to be extinct until they were rediscovered. Imagine rediscovering a species of tree.
Yeah.
They rediscovered a species of tree in China.
Hello, Fender. Yeah, look, you know that tree you thought was extinct? We've cut it down. Do you want us to do a selective?
It's the last one.
It's the last one.
This is, FSR or what?
Yeah.
So this kind of actually brings us around, talking of old things, to a topic that Joe Branton has proposed for this evening.
I thought you were going to just say talking of Joe Branton.
Joe Branton. Like, hello. He's not really old. He's just got a 50s haircut.
Am I the oldest?
Yeah. You are the oldest.
Yeah. I'm the oldest. Hello.
It's Joe.
I'm
the young guy.
I remember when we played lute.
Do any of the distributors that we work with?
We can get lutes.
Stentor
still do lutes?
Stentor do it, yes.
Actually, let me rephrase that question. Still work with Stentor?
No. Yes, we do.
Last time I spoke to Steve. He's going to correct me next time he's in, from Barnes & Mullins.
Yeah, I know, yeah.
And he was saying that they've still got some bouzouki strings from like the 60s.
Yeah, in fact, we work very closely with Stentor this week.
We shot some videos.
We've been doing some videos with them.
On the Ozark, the tenor.
They supply Ozark, and yeah, we've been doing the little...
Not just the tenor,
four-string.
We also did the high-strung.
Yeah,
is that the Nashville tuning one?
Yeah,
oh,
really
man.
Cool.
That guitar is banging.
Yeah. Ozark, like, actually, when you look into their catalogue, they do like some really cool, weird stuff that is no money. Like that Nashville guitar is, what, $299 or something?
Exactly.
The cool thing about the... what I was about to say was very boring and not cool at all. I want to put forward a different question.
Go.
Can you put Can you just restring any old guitar with Nashville tuning?
Yes.
It's a different scale.
But like, acoustic guitar.
Yeah, you could. You couldn't use the same set of strings.
No, you need to get the Nashville tune, because the Dario do...
Yeah, you can definitely tune an ordinary six string into Nashville.
To make it clear, you definitely need to buy the Nashville strings, not try and tune up your standard guitar string.
Yeah,
don't do that.
I'm getting there. Bing! But yeah, so for people who don't know, Nashville tuning is the octave strings on a 12 string. So you just use the high strings.
Actually, yeah. I was going to ask about that, because it wasn't...
Because
the bottom strings are octave, but the top strings are unison.
It's just one of the unison strings.
So top two strings sound lower than the...
Yes, they do. It's weird. The highest string, I think, is
the B string
third string.
Is also an octave. It is not an octave string.
Yeah, so E and B are just normal. Then the G is up an octave. Yeah. So the G string...
Like the strum doesn't sort of go up. It sort of goes down.
Yeah. It's something everyone should try. Like, try and get your hands on. I mean, particularly that Ozark one, because it's just set up for it already, you know. And if you're into... They work really well if you want to get, like, 12 stringy sounding guitar parts, but you don't necessarily want a 12 string.
Double track everything on your record with a...
With a high strung. Yeah. Very nice indeed. So anyway, back onto the topic. Joe Branton, what did you want to talk about this evening?
Oh, I gave you notes so that you could talk about it.
Well, no, I'm just saying, do you want to announce it? I mean, I know what it is.
Yeah, fine. Well, I thought...
You're trying to give off the the idea of spontaneity.
Yeah, exactly. Rather than me reading off of a page. Well, I thought this week we could talk about... I titled it Vintage versus Modern, which is not necessarily what it is. I more wanted to talk about sort of the advantages and disadvantages of sort of classic styled stuff and very modern styled stuff across the board. So talking about guitars, talking about amps, and talking about pedals. So I mean, I listed a couple of examples, but I thought we could go off and talk about a few different things. I mean, maybe to get the ball rolling, the quite obvious example I picked, because they're a very similar price point, was the Fender American Deluxe series.
Yep.
And the the Fender American Vintage series, just because they're a similar price point but totally different instruments aimed at a totally different market. And I thought maybe we could talk a bit about why someone might go for one instead of the other.
What's available now? Because I don't actually...
There's also some in-betweens to make it super confusing.
Today someone asked me about a 58 Tele, and I didn't even know that was a thing.
The 58 Tele is really, really cool.
Okay.
It's really cool. I can't remember what pickups are in it. I think they might be American Vintage 58s.
Yeah, they are.
So it's as far as I remember, the American Vintage stuff that's available right now is, in the Tele side of things, you've got the 52, obviously... the
Hot Rod 52?
So there's the American Vintage 52, the Hot Rod 52, which is the same as the 52, but with like a mini humbucker in the bridge. You've got
in the neck.
You've got the 58, which I think comes in three finishes, one of which being white blonde, and it looks... I mean,
58 is actually now only available in white blonde.
Blonde. Okay, cool. It is amazing. That was the best finish. They did it in a Sunburst.
Yep.
And I think they might have done it in a Sonic Blue as well, which I don't...
No, that's the 64.
In fact, actually, with the 52, I don't think the Hot Rodded 52 is part of their redesigned American Vintage range.
No.
Is it not?
No.
That's an old guitar,
It's
yeah.
an older guitar.
Because they did that in blonde and black. And, I mean, you know, I know I get sort of chastised for being, oh, telly. You know, but like I wasn't really into that that neck pickup anyway. I think
into neck pickups full stop.
I actually started to get into neck pickups a little bit, but you know,
scandal
stop the press. But so there's the 50, the 52, the 58. Then I don't think there's a 62 telly, is there? Not an American vintage. No. It's just a Japanese 62.
Yep.
So then you've
and then
got
a 64.
And then the
59 Strat as well.
And the 70, well, we're talking about tellies, John.
Sorry.
Then the 72, the American Vintage 72 telly.
Yeah.
And then with the Strats, you've got the 56. They used to do a 54, and I don't think they do anymore. So it's the 56. And I also think the 56 has replaced the 57, I think.
Yeah, I think it's 56, 59,
which you can
64.
Get in Rosewood or Maple. And then 65. Yeah, because they discontinued the 62 as well.
So weird to do a 65 Strat, because that's that weird transitional year where the logo's different.
That's 64.
Is it?
I think so.
No, 65s have got that bigger weird logo and a slightly different headstock.
Really?
Yeah.
Because 64, they had the gold logo. And then 65, I think they had the bigger logo. And then 66 was the big headstock, wasn't it? To match the big logo.
Was this big headstock as early as 66?
Mm-hmm. What's Post-CBS, isn't it? So CBS was 60...
Something like that.
Yeah.
One of those. But yeah, I know 65 for a fact has got a weird head, a weird logo. 60, so.
Does the 64 have a bound fingerboard?
No.
Because I know the 65 Jazzmaster has a bound fingerboard.
No, the only reason that, say for example, the Eric Johnson has a bound fingerboard is because he saw it in a Fender catalogue in the 60s and it never came to production.
Oh, really?
Yeah.
That's very interesting.
So he was like, he said he always wanted one of them. And then
so are the only production line guitars with a bound fingerboard then? The Eric Johnson and the American Vintage 65 Jazzmaster?
Which is discontinued.
Which is discontinued?
Mm.
Interesting. So if you want a bound fingerboard, Eric Johnson. Anyway, that's nothing to do.
Or the 65 Jazzmaster we've got left. We have got one left.
Aztec Gold. So Jazzmasters and Jaguars still part of the line or are they all gone?
No,
they're still part of the line. Are they still part of the line? I thought they'd all gone because I thought they'd do the Johnny Marr.
Which is...
The best,
best one
you can buy. I think they do an American Vintage Jazzmaster.
They do a Jaguar. They do a 65, don't they?
They do 65 Jazzmaster, which is the one with the bound fingerboard.
Which is now discontinued, apparently.
Yeah, I'm sure it's discontinued.
Did they do a Jaguar?
Yeah.
Are you looking it up?
I'm looking it up.
But yeah.
There's a 65 Jaguar.
Okay.
Has it got a bound fingerboard?
And a 65 Jazzmaster as well.
I thought they were discontinued. I am mistaken.
Because for years they did the 62 Jaguar, which was kind of never that popular. Nah. But I think that was because Jaguars never used to be that popular.
I think
popular.
At that point, though, I remember when we had those, and you either had the Japanese one.
Yeah.
Or... I remember when the Jazzmaster offset section was four guitars, where my desk was, and it was the J Mascis, the purple one.
Yeah.
Another Japanese one. We had the Elvis Costello.
The Elvis Costello one was great.
For a little bit. And the American Vintage one. And those American Vintage ones, they just weren't that good.
Also, it's worth noting that the other Japanese one that you said was baritone. It's baritone Jaguar, which was well good.
So
they used to do black two humbuckers, didn't they?
So, on the American Deluxe side of things, I guess there's no offsets anyway.
Thanks.
You're going to talk about basses, aren't you?
There's also a 58p bass and a 63p bass and a 64 jazz bass.
The 58 is wicked.
Yeah, the 58 is totally cool.
58 is maple board.
That's right, yeah. So we've just... I mean, basically, it's...
It's the modern P bass, isn't it, basically?
It's the modern P bass. The 58 that they do is very, very similar to... Basically, the 58 is kind of what the Mexican 50s reissue P bass is. So, yeah, big, thick, deep neck and in maple. One piece maple. And, it comes with all the appropriate pickup covers and bridge cover and everything.
Are they on a standard or do they just come in the case?
No, they're on a standard.
Are they?
Which is really cool. The only thing that I dislike is they come with roundwounds, which is funny because roundwounds didn't even exist. So
did they not?
A little bit annoying. No, I guess
that most people, if they're buying that, would want to be using roundwounds anyway.
Late 60s. Mm. Sorry?
I guess people, if they're buying that bass, would want to be using roundwounds. Most people aren't going to want to use flat wounds.
Most people are idiots, I suppose.
and was there on the jazz bass front a 62 and a 60?
There's two P basses and only one jazz bass
okay.
at the moment.
What's the other P bass?
I think it's a 63.
Okay.
Is it 63?
Yeah.
Well,
I think so. I'm going to check. Yeah, 63. So 63 is rosewood board.
Okay.
And again, comes with all the pickup covers, but we get those more kind of 60s colours, so we get like Olympic white with a white plate and a rosewood board.
Sunburst. Sunburst? Okay. And then the jazz is a...
Jazz is a 64.
Okay.
So the 64 is the first time they moved the tug bar. So I think the tug bar's thumb side. And I think 64... No, they. When did they introduce...
Not dual concentrics, they're just normal tone controls.
No, yeah, that's right.
Okay, so let's talk about the equivalents then, going right over the other side of the Fender catalogue. The American Deluxe is the future, isn't it? It's the futuristic Fender range.
So Fender doing everything.
So the American Deluxe stuff, you've got... If you start with the Strats, you've got lock in Spurs will. I think.
Well,
Spurs,
I suppose what we should say is make clear that they don't. There is basically one deluxe model. But yeah, there's two different neck types instrument. And just three different pickup configurations.
Yeah. Is that how much you get in guitars?
Yeah.
We just get a jazz bass, a P bass, and a Jaguar bass.
You get five string.
And, and a dimension bass.
Four string.
I suppose so. Yeah.
So with the Strats, you've got so two different neck shapes. And not all of them are. There's the Modern C and the V-neck, but the V-neck I think is only available in a couple of models. I think you can get it in white, red, and Sunburst, I think. Then you've got, as Matt says, the three different pickup configurations. There's SSS, HSS, and HSH, and with the HSH and HSS. They have got a roller nut.
They also have the little push button that takes you directly to the bridge pickup and you push it.
Is it called like the afterburner or something?
The blower switch.
That's it.
And then you've got the S1 switching, which nobody really knows.
It's a tough one because the S1 switch, you can basically make an S1 switch do whatever you want.
When did they first introduce S1? Was it on the
2003?
Yeah, but it wasn't on the deluxes, was it? It was on the highways. Oh, was it?
Yep.
The standards.
Yeah,
because highways had it.
Standard basses all had it, and I think standard guitars all had it. It's the bass that I've got, which is a 2003, was the last one before S1 was standard.
Wow, I did not know that.
Because it used to come on the highways after that, didn't it?
Yep.
But it was really a thing, like, for the highways. It's why I thought the highways were the first to have it. Was they really, like, when the highways were made and marketed, that was the thing that they had S1.
So I mean, they used to do quite a lot. So that bass is 2003. I think it was only 2000 or 2001 where they did like rolled fretboard edges. That was a big thing because before your board was completely flat at the edge and then the neck sort of came up to meet it, whereas now they do they roll the fretboard edges in. And then, the next big thing after that was having the S1 switch on there. That was the next big iteration. And we still had, like, even up until a couple of years ago, do you remember we had that Butterscotch P bass that was a standard that had an S1 switch?
Yeah.
American standard, black plate. I think it was from about 2008, and it was just still in stock. You just couldn't find a home for it. And now I think we have found a home for it. But, S1 was across the standard range.
Wow. Yeah. But you can switch it to do whatever you want. I think on the three single coils, it gives you, like, all three at once. It gives you series parallel.
Yeah, I really like the option. I think it's the fourth position when the S1's down is you get the you don't get the bridge position but you get the neck and sorry you don't get the middle position you get the neck and the bridge together, which I think sounds really good. Sounds like a really weird like wide humbucker.
I also was going to point out the fact that after Fender announced it last year and then we had some and I sold one, I thought they were brilliant. They haven't done anything else with it. The Strat Deluxe Plus with the personality cards.
Yeah. That was part of the Deluxe series.
Because I sold one. I sold the first one that came in on the day it came into the shop. A customer of mine walked in who was waiting for a custom shop to be ordered and he went, I want to buy a Deluxe in the meantime. And I was like, you've got to try this. It's amazing. These personality cards are great. They work really, really well. Fender have just announced it at NAMM. I think this was in like April or something like that. And then I was like, I think there's loads more coming out, and they've done nothing with it.
Yeah. They're not doing any like replacement cards.
I don't think they've announced. They didn't even bother mentioning it again at some point. Yeah, it's a shame because it's such. I think we've got one in stock. I think they're still a production model, but they're so good. They really need to push that so much harder.
I think that would be good if they came out with some, signature personality cards or something, or something
kind of like what Roland have done with the
Blues Cube.
With the Blues Cube,
we've not talked about that yet, have we?
Blues Cube.
We should probably talk about the Blues Cube quickly on a quick tangent.
So the Blues Cube was like officially launched at NAMM.
They launched it before.
Yeah.
But the big reveal they had was that they are alongside the Blues Cube, you could now get these.
Even cooler than this. So before this was announced, basically there's a bit on the underside of the chassis of the Blues Cube that's just like a port.
Yeah.
And people were like, what's this thing? What does it do? No, it's never seen anything like
that
before.
I think we even asked Jeff from Roland at one point. He was like, it's for updates. And obviously he sort of walked away and was like, I actually have no idea what this is for. I need to look into this.
He definitely knew.
He definitely did not.
Anyway.
So he came back and said, so there's now this, you can buy these like these things that look a bit like valves, and they turn the Blues Cube into a signature amp. Mm. And speaking of Eric Johnson, the first person to do one of these valve tube things that you can plug into your Blues Cube is Eric Johnson, and it makes it sound completely different. You know, it's pretty astonishing how different this amp becomes. Mm.
They're adding components essentially, aren't they? It's plugging something else into the circuit to give it a different tone.
A bit like this Korg New Valve.
Okay, I don't think I even know about this.
Not heard about that. Someone did mention it on the group on another side note. Talking of add-ons, Korg reckon they've developed a new valve.
A new valve.
I have seen this. It looks like a microchip. Valve?
It looks like a microchip.
It's tiny,
but it works the same way as a valve. They've basically squashed a 12AX7 and then made it so it can component mount onto circuit boards.
Is this what's in the?
It's not in anything yet.
It's not in anything yet.
Because they've got a mini. There's a mini valve in that blue guitar thing, isn't there?
No.
What's the blue guitar?
It's the
Thomas Blug.
Yeah, Blug. The guy who was involved in making the Tube Meisters, the Hughes and Kettner Tube Meisters, has started his own thing. He's basically gone, oh yeah, so I'm pretty good at doing this sort of stuff, and I guess I'll just do it by myself.
Okay.
And so the first product he's launched is the blue guitar, but the BLU is very small.
Yeah.
And then the G is a capital G, and then it's guitar.
Okay.
So it's like blue guitar, but like blue guitar, and it's got a mini valve in it.
No, this is this is basically honestly.
Well,
it's,
no, this would be shot down.
Perfect.
Thanks, Matt.
No. This is a completely new component.
Right. Wow.
That's not in anything yet.
Don't they also think it's like it won't wear out like a valve? So
they
that's why.
Yeah, they say that it will never wear out, and that means that you'll be able to. Have an amp that sounds the same as valve, but it'll be able to run on things like batteries.
Because you can just mount this little thing on a circuit board.
On a circuit board and let the circuit power it from the mains.
Have Korg discovered a new colour? Is that what
they have. Yeah.
But it looks mental.
What's this colour called?
Grello.
But Korg have developed it with a components company. They haven't just gone... They've basically deconstructed valves and rebuilt them into these tiny little microchips. Well, they're... like big components ish.
So, how about the American Deluxe Telly?
Well, that's what we're talking about, wasn't it?
Oh.
So, I think there are two different models of the American Deluxe Telly. I think there's a normal telly, and then there's the thin line telly as well. Is that correct? I think there's only
there is
ones.
At the moment. There's an American Deluxe Thin Line, but I think is that FSR?
No.
Okay. I think they do an American Deluxe Thin Line, and then they do an American Deluxe. But then they also do American Deluxe Ash, which is not bound.
Oh, I suppose so,
It's rounded edges like a normal telly.
It kind of looks like an American Vintage 52.
Yeah, but it's deluxe.
Yeah.
But so it's got the noiseless in it.
The American Deluxe telly, the normal one, has got Strat contouring on the back, the belly contour.
Well, a lot of the new tellies do. Even the standard has got
the
belly cut.
Yeah. Vintage Noiseless pickups.
No, not Vintage Noiseless. N3.
Oh, yeah, okay.
Vintage Noiseless is something different. And it's important that you... Mark, this is very important that you know that there's a difference so that when someone asks you to fit replacement pickups into their guitar, you don't accidentally order them the Vintage Noiseless pickups.
Has this happened to
you? Because that's what you thought were in the pickups of that guitar, and then they get installed and then that guy gets upset with you.
Did that happen?
Hypothetically.
Okay, good. So, the N3s are in there, which... So, Vintage Noiseless and N3s and the old Sumalian Cobalt SCNs or whatever they were.
SCN.
They're all quite a very... They're a very, very similar pickup, aren't they? They're quite...
Yeah, N3 is basically the upgraded version of the SCNs. So, N3, I think, still stands for three...
Noiselessness.
No, I think it was like... obviously, the SCNs were three metal compounds together for the magnet, weren't they? And I think N3 is the same, but it's a redesigned.
Okay. And they're
solarium, cobalt, nickel?
Something like that.
Yeah.
They're quite far away from something like a Fat 50s, aren't they?
In that they're so different.
Very modern sounding, very hi-fi.
Yeah, the Noiseless pickups are great because they're quite high output, but they maintain a lot of Strat characteristics. But they tend to be, I always say they're a lot more to the point.
Yes. Very compressed sounding.
Yeah.
And so they're not really as jangly and noisy.
Well, they are kind of jangly. They're not.
They're just like, they're like super bright, but not like so bright that they're.
They're very.
I guess probably compressed is the right word.
Yeah,
they're very clinical.
Yeah.
They're very, very clinical. You know what you're going to get. Whereas with like the American Vintage 52, you plug it in, like, you might be like, what on earth is going on with this guitar today?
It's raucous.
And essentially what you've just said, it sums up the difference, I think, between vintage and modern stuff across the board.
Yeah.
Definitely. And on the.
On the bass front. Well, Deluxe Series has expanded a bit. I mean, for the longest time, we had just a precision bass and a jazz bass. The precision bass, however, was also fitted with a noiseless jazz pickup.
Yep.
In the bridge.
They used to have a double jazz in the bridge.
Yes, they did. That's right. Quite a long time ago, they did. We're talking like 2003, 2004. Yeah.
Yeah, I've been around a while.
Yeah, I know. They've changed it like a long time ago.
Yeah.
Back to a single. That was quite cool, actually, having the double jazz.
And a smaller body shape as well.
That's right. They trialled that for a bit on both the precision. It was called the Dinky.
Yeah.
Precision body.
I quite like those. Like, you would think it'd be something that I would hate, but the double jazz small bodied American Deluxe Precision, I actually really liked.
Jazzes were called longhorns because they kept the horn the same length but made the body smaller.
Yeah.
Just to keep the weight, the headstock from dialing. But yeah, on the P-bass, it was practically a different body shape. But now they've gone back to, thank God, because I thought both of those things looked cack. So fortunately now they've gone back to the ordinary precision shape and the ordinary jazz shape. I mean, I've always had a problem with the Deluxe Series. I guess mainly because Fender will always be like a classic vintage style company for me. So when they try and do the modern thing, I'm not really very into it. So
is that why you really didn't like the Rascal last year?
I really like the Rascal.
Okay, is that why you really didn't like the Dimension Bass last year?
I really didn't like the Dimension Bass.
Oh, okay,
bass,
right,
yeah.
Okay, fine. Okay, I thought I was going to trip you up there.
Which is now part of the American Deluxe series.
Yeah, that's right. This year, yeah, bringing it back around to that, this year we've had two additions to American Deluxe. We've got Jaguar Bass and we've also got the Dimension Bass.
See, for me, the Dimension Bass probably should have always been an American Deluxe.
Yeah,
because
Because it's active for a start.
Yeah, it's like, you know, it's a Music Man-y style bass, I guess. And it completely makes sense.
Yeah. That is the difference, I think, on the bass front, that when we have the Deluxe Series, that's Fender's chance to introduce active circuitry. But they do have active-passive switches on all their Deluxe instruments. I don't know if they do on the Dimension, however, because, I mean, they're really not designed to be passive.
No.
So they're probably not on those, but I couldn't confirm. But certainly on the Jaguar, the Precision and the Jazz Bass, you can run them passively.
They also, I don't know if they still do, but the American Deluxe, definitely where they had the double jazz pickup, had two 9-volt batteries in the back. Do they still have that?
Yeah, still a pair of them. Yeah, 18 volts just to make that preamp run properly, yeah.
I didn't realise that's still the case.
I mean, and I assume it's the same for the guitars. One thing Fender do still try to do is make everything very classic looking. So like the jazz basses are done up like a 73, so it's like the black block inlay maple neck and a natural finish body.
I don't think that is the case, actually, because with the American Deluxe range, apart from that hot rod that we mentioned, apart from the Ash one that Matt was talking about, I think they do all look very different to anything else in the standard range, anything in the vintage range.
They're very bling.
I guess when you say the telly's having tummy cuts and everything.
Well, no, even the standards have those nowadays.
You said that, yeah.
But they're all kind of not sparkly finishes, but they've all got like a little bit of shimmer to them. So you've got so one of the finishes that you can get in the Strat is Sunset Metallic, which is like a cherry it's like a heritage cherry
Sienna
sunburst.
Sunburst is the official Fender colour.
No, that's a different finish in the American Standard range. Sunset Metallic is a sort of sparkly type finish. And then you also
isn't it a sparkle Sienna Sunburst?
No, it's not. It's different. It looks more like a Gibson heritage cherry.
Okay.
And heritage cherry sunburst. And then instead of Olympic White, there's Olympic Pearl. Which again is like Olympic White, but a bit sort of fleshier, and you can also get what's the darker colour?
Is the Olympic Pearl, is it like, what was the colour released on all the black tops?
Inca Silver.
No, it wasn't.
Yeah, they did
Ghost Silver.
Ghost Silver Ghost. In the black tops. Yes, yeah. No, it's not like it looks like from. Well, if I look at it with my shonky eyes, it looks like it looks like Olympic white. But if you when you get up close, there's like a real shimmer to it.
I see.
Can I say they used to one of the best colours ever, Surf Pearl.
Yeah.
Surf
Pearl. Do you remember, yeah. 72
do you remember
telly
we got we got an FSR Deluxe Precision Bass with a jazz bass pickup active.
Yeah.
In Surf Pearl.
One of the best finishes ever.
With black block inlays. It basically looked like a Billy Sheehan.
Block inlays is something that they really should do more of on guitars.
Yep.
They're releasing an HH.
It's a bit of a bass thing, isn't
yeah,
it?
Yeah, they're releasing an HH telly with block inlays this year.
Oh, yeah, that one was
cracking. Why don't they do amazing. A reverse where the whole frets are the inlays and then the dot or the block is just the fretboard?
I kind of like the way Hofner do block inlays where they just it goes across the whole fret.
Yeah.
So you do have like a little border of rosewood on each
oh, really?
Fret, but yeah. then the pearl goes the whole way.
Is that
from
just
end
on the?
End.
Is yeah. that on everything?
That's on everything. That's just how they do block inlays. So guitars and basses alike. Yeah.
Well, one thing I was going to say, actually, talking of vintage and modern, we were saying about 2 9-volt batteries. Why have they not gone to like lithium ion batteries, like rechargeable batteries?
Do you think it's like?
Because why haven't pedals though, mate?
Too much, too fast.
Well, I mean, imagine that you're doing a gig in the middle of nowhere and there's like a little shop there. You're not going to be able to walk in and get a lithium ion.
But the idea is that you would just be able to plug it in before a gig and it'll be charged. Because what if you've got a 9-volt battery and it runs out and you can't buy one from a shop? But if you've got a rechargeable battery, because all the G-Force Mini E-Tunes.
I know. I understand what you're saying, but they're
lithium ion
isn't standardised. There's no standard shape for that battery. Right. Whereas,
the little ones. I'm gonna.
You mean the watch batteries?
Yeah, that's lithium ion,
isn't
it?
No.
I think they're still alkaline.
Are they?
Yeah.
I like the way when no one actually knows the answer, they just go higher and then.
Lithium ion, as far as I'm aware, there's no standard. It's a type of battery, but there's not
what
like
the,
you can't
like,
buy
original
like,
iPods. Exactly, isn't it?
Well, it's just anything pretty much that's got a built-in battery. I think lithium ion.
Maybe still the current.
Yeah, possibly. Because there's no standard, you're not going to find it cross-brand like you find a double A or a 9-volt. You know, the square, what they used to call PPC, whatever it was, PPC
Orange,
9,
PPC 2 and 2.
No.
In a pedal.
Yeah, that'd be weird. So that's why they haven't switched to lithium ion, I think, at the moment, is that there's no standard size.
Right.
So what are we saying on the... I mean, this topic's got spiraled well out of control.
Yeah, yeah.
Vintage versus
who
modern.
Who was asked, what pizza did you have? Is that what we were talking about?
Yeah, that was what we were talking about.
So what are people getting from each range in general that... they're not going to get from the other range and vice versa?
Well, I think they are binary opposites in that one is a really specific thing that does one specific thing really well.
Yeah.
And the other is trying to very much be a jack of all trades. And I think for that reason, they're aimed at completely different markets.
Or you could buy the American vintage 50s Hot Rod Strat or Tele. And they are 9.5 to... they are 12-inch radius across the board.
Oh, yeah, we didn't even talk
board.
About
radii.
They are 12-inch radius across the board with hot-rodded 50 pickups and jumbo frets. So a real modern neck.
What?
But 50s pickups, but a 50s body as well.
I don't even know what this guitar is.
Yeah, it looks... Oh, I could.
Well, that's it. I mean, Fender do that a fair amount. My voice went quite high then. But Fender do that quite a lot. Think about the whole like modern player series.
Yeah, I mean, Gibson do the same as well. So you've got... custom shop, like super vintage, and then you've got Les Paul standard, very modern, pushing the boundaries.
Definitely. And prices are kind of evening out at the moment, aren't they? So you're kind of lower end of the custom shop, I guess, is equivalent to the Les Paul standard.
Or we've got some old stock custom shop Les Pauls at the moment that are just as good a price as 2015 standards. So get them while they're there.
And I want to buy one.
It's been Gibson's philosophy, isn't it, that they've wanted to make the standards and the kind of top end of the like the production line stuff, much more modern. And then obviously the custom shop has kind of retained that vintage heritage. I think, Joe Brandt, you've written down amps here, but let's skip that. I kind of want to do something on pedals, like a vintage versus modern style of pedals. What would you class as like a modern style of pedal?
It's going to be digital versus analog, I guess.
Because boutique is generally analog.
True, but they're all trying to be old. I mean, it doesn't have to be made in the old days, but certainly a boutique stuff, generally speaking, I guess is trying to mimic old stuff.
I mean, obviously, the case in point is Strymon. Are they trying to mimic anything?
Well, I guess so. I mean, even though it's, I mean, a tape.
Well, yeah. I mean, I was thinking more about the two flagship models. You know, the Big Sky and the
Time. I suppose if you take their modelers, obviously they're using these digital processes. These Shark, I think, is the company, DSP chips.
Right.
They can process something like 124,000 algorithms a second or something. They're amazing.
I can do that. My
brain, mate. Put me in a pedal and I'll tell you what. And it can process so many different calculations that allow for so much more complicated, complex sounds. But then Rack Gear's been doing that for ages.
Jay looks like he's desperate to say something.
No, I'm sorry. I was trying to think of I started to say, this is an inappropriate time to interrupt Matt because he's saying something important. Where all I'm trying to do is talk about Star Trek.
of course, that's what you were trying to do.
I read something this week which said I can't remember the exact figures, but when The Next Generation aired in 1991, I think.
Something like that. Isn't it late 80s?
Maybe it's 89. Commander Data was put forward as like this supercomputer, and at the time he was like, it was said that he could process like however many, you know, things a second, and it made him like 600 times faster than the most state-of-the-art computer at the time. And like nowadays the equivalent of Data is like not even an iPhone. Like, do you know what I mean? It said something like that, like
probably
he's
like a Strymon timeline,
600 megabytes a second.
Absolutely. And you just sort of like, that's why this whole and, you know, to sort of kind of anchor this back into guitars.
Well, I mean, you've got to really try hard to anchor this back
come on
in.
Then
like
drum roll please.
Okay, wait, let me... The whole idea of processing power, I think, will just, you know, stuff like the timeline and stuff like the Eventide Space, and even to a certain degree to bring in what you had written down but we can't talk about, stuff like the Kemper stuff and the DB Mark stuff, will continue to, like increasing processing power and increase in efficiency and increase in... the way that they, you know, the productivity of these things, simply through, you know, a trickle down effect of computing, you know, and you'll always be able to get something a little bit better next year. And I think that's why companies like Strymon are doing such a good job, because they are, even to a certain degree, these things are kind of future-proofing themselves.
I mean, I would say that in answer to that question about like what is a vintage style pedal and what is a modern style pedal, I would say that a modern style pedal is a pedal that is trying to move things forward, whereas a vintage style pedal is perhaps trying to do something that something else has already done a bit better.
I don't think an M5 is all the sounds in it. Yeah, absolutely. I would say that if you're going with those two categories, which I think is quite astute, then the M5 is a vintage pedal.
I don't know if that's necessarily true. It's a multi effects for a start, and I think multi effects almost need to be as modern.
I mean, I would say
that it goes for like weird sounds on there, synth sounds on there.
No, I'd have them as their own category, actually.
Yeah, but maybe then synth sounds are based on old synthesizers, aren't they?
Yeah, I mean, I would say something more like the Firehawk, which is the new Line 6 unit.
Line 6 one.
is perhaps a bit more, you know, it's quite futuristic. You control it with an app on your phone. You know, it's not trying to recreate the sound of a tube screamer, you know. Or, I mean, it is kind of in the pedal itself, but it's doing it in a sort of inventive way.
I suppose that's
way.
The thing, is that pedals are doing it in an inventive way and pushing the boundaries on how much you can control of the sound, but the sound itself is a vintage sound, I suppose.
The
I mean, the ones that stick out for me are the Strymon stuff, particularly the bigger pedals, and Source Audio.
Things like the hot
Source
hand.
Stuff and the Source stuff for sure.
You know,
I was going to say, you know, like all this stuff that's coming out with MIDI, but MIDI's been going for like 30 years.
Yeah,
but I still think that would be considered modern. Like something vintage would be the Band of Gypsies reissue.
Yeah, I suppose the thing is what's your cutoff.
Well, totally.
But I think we can't
apply the same. Yeah, anything older than 2 weeks is...
You've got to cut it off. Anyway, right, let's do some questions. Joe Branton, I mean, Joe Branton's topic out of 5, Matt Knight.
What was wrong with my topic?
I liked it, but we just, you know, we just need to...
How many 50 slick hairstyles do you give it out of 5?
My favourite bit was when we talked about Star Trek.
You missed out half of it.
No, a third. I think literally a third.
This is great. Well, this is really helping myself.
It's a good job you're not in charge, isn't it? It's a good job you're not the host.
I want people to get on the Facebook group, facebook.com/groups/guitar nerds group, and give Joe Branton's topic
a number. No, don't do that. Just suggest some more topics because Mark Packham can't even think of one.
I was busy.
Talking of Joe's hairstyle, Joe came into the shop earlier this week, and Anna, who works on the till, was like, "Oh, where's your bun gone?" And I quickly stepped in with, "Yeah, top knot's not fashionable anymore." And Joe sort of looked at me as if to be like, "Don't." No, it's true.
He's right. Yeah. So yes, please give Joe a mark out of 5 on the Facebook group.
Someone did offer me a suggestion of a topic that maybe we could talk about at some point, which was, I don't know if we've ever done it. Have we ever done a left-handed special?
We've not done a left-handed special.
Oh, we should definitely do that.
Maybe we should do that next week. Talk about left-handed. It was, actually, it was Jack on the Facebook group who posted up an amazing picture of the 339 that he bought. He bought it a month or so ago, and that was probably a little less. And Graham, our guitar tech, converted it, because you can't buy a 339 left-handed, so he converted it from right-handed to left-handed and did an incredible job.
I didn't really understand that picture. So he's moved the volume of tone controls.
The volume, tone controls, he's moved
the jack socket.
The jack socket.
The bridge. Because the bridge has compensated it slightly angled one side and the other.
And
so
filled all of the gaps with, and then refinished it. And unless you get right up close to it, you cannot see. It looked so good.
That photo and more on the Facebook group, facebook.com/groups/guitar nerds group, where you can chat to other guitar nerds like yourself, and you can send us questions which we will answer thusly.
No.
Jury says, I'm trying to pick up a multi-effects just for modulation. I've got a Crybaby and a Phase 90 on my board, but can't justify individual pedals for the rest. I want to be able to use more than one at once. What do you all think of the Zoom G3X?
Too big. I mean, if you want something just for modulation, why don't you just
Packham's got one on his board.
Yeah, but two effects at once.
Oh.
Tuner.
Or more than one effect at once. Yeah, I mean, actually, I didn't read the question and I replied on the group and I said, I was just really enthusiastic. Like, I've got one of these. Get the Moore Mod Factory. And he was like, yeah, I need more than one effect at once.
M9?
Get two Mod Factories.
Yeah, seriously. There's still a minimum footprint.
Surely Line 6 M9 is as big as a Zoom G3X if you're going
to
disqualify that for size.
To be honest, I did also not read the question correctly.
Yeah.
I think the Zoom G3X is a very, very good pedal. I think all of the new Zoom pedals, I think are very, very good. I am actually a little bit, I think at the start of 2014, we spoke a little bit about how we were really excited for what Zoom were going to be doing that year. And I don't think they quite stepped up to the plate in the way that anybody really hoped they would. Like,
did they release anything at now?
Well, that is my point exactly.
Okay.
There was some cool stuff that came out at the end of 2013, like the Handy recorders and all of those bits and pieces that came out were great. And then there was the G3 and the B3 series, and I think it was a real cut above everything else that was around at the time. If you can spend the extra money, I think Can you four cable method the ME80?
No.
In that case, the GT100. It's more expensive than the G3X, but if you're only using it for modulation, I assume you're probably putting it through the effects loop of the amp.
I mean, you wouldn't necessarily need to four cable the ME80 because, I mean, if you've got...
Can you send return if you're not...
Yeah, if you've got...
Just don't use the drive effects.
Yeah, if you've got an effects loop, use the drive effects and just go into the instrument in from your...
Yeah, I suppose so, from your effects loop. Mm-hmm. I mean, I just think that the ME80 and the GT100 especially, I really like the GT100. I think since the ME80 came out, we've sort of fallen away a little bit from the GT100. But I plugged it in the other day, and that's such a great unit.
I mean, they're a little bit Starship Enterprise when you first get your hands on them. There's a lot going on. But
I don't think that... But they don't need to be.
Data's in there. More powerful than Data.
It probably is more powerful than Lieutenant Commander Data.
Oh, sorry. Can I just say, two mod factories? I mean, I think we're all glossing over the obvious answer here.
Yeah, I mean, obviously it depends what you're doing. Like, if you're using more than once, you know, it's hardly, like... a bastion of convenience, is it? I mean, two mod factories. I need chorus and I need flange on this one.
I can't imagine what two modulations you would use at the same time.
Chorus and more chorus.
Chorus and trem?
Yes.
Ring modulator and flanger.
Always need those two on simultaneously.
My eyes are too dark. Yeah. Is
there a ring modulator on that? There is a ring modulator on there,
Auto-wah.
Yes.
And
has that got an auto-wah on it?
One of the settings is ER. Does that, like, save your life? No.
Yeah. Yeah, that's right, yeah. Jay, this isn't great radio, but Jay has picked up my entire pedal board.
My eyes aren't good reading.
My eyes can't quite see.
Hans Molman over there has got to literally press the pedal right against his face to see what's on there.
It's really badly written.
So is there a ring modulator on there? There, I think there is.
There's not. There's an envelope ring, which is the ER.
That's a ring modulator, but it is controlled. That is controlled by how hard you hit the strings.
Chorus. I know what chorus is. There's that. That's on it.
Well done.
Touch wah, auto wah. What's the difference between the touch wire and the auto wire? Is it just when you...
One can be set up for velocity sensitive, and one is on a timing base.
Okay, cool.
This isn't a... probably not the best podcast segment.
I would say this is probably the worst bit of radio I've ever listened to.
Anyway, right, let's bring it back. So what we're suggesting then, we're saying that probably a G3X is a really good option.
Yeah, I think that he's probably gone for the right
maybe
sort of thing.
Either two mod factories or two Line 6 M5s, maybe.
What about two MS-70 CDRs?
This is what I was thinking. Can you not have two effects at once on with that?
Yes, you can.
And it's
you can have up to six.
Chorus, delay, and reverb.
Because that's the great thing about it. Because I remember when I had one, and I went to one patch and was going on and off. I was like, this isn't turning on and off the effects that I want. And then I realised that you set six in the chain, but then you set... in the chain, what the stomp switch
turns on and off. Cool. Yeah, okay.
So you can have it's permanently set to a delay and a reverb, but the switch
which
turns
you leave
on
all the time, right?
Yeah, and then you turn on a phaser.
I really like that pedal. I thought it sounded way more impressive than people gave it credit for. I think it was an awesome bit
of
kit.
That was part of that sort of Zoom revolution.
Yeah.
That happened in sort of late 2013, and it was just a shame that nothing came out last year. I was really, and I feel quite emotionally invested in this because I really stood up.
We got behind
Zoom. Dude, I was like, they're gonna come good this year, guys. We're gonna see some more great stuff, and they didn't release anything.
So MS-70 CDR definitely worth a look. Let's do another question. This comes from Ross, who says,
I have a simple query regarding how to connect a guitar head and cab for dirty tones. With a combo for clean tones, using, for example, a Boss AB2 selector to switch between the two. I have always used combos with an effects loop. However, I'm considering purchasing a Jimroot Terror head or an Orange OR15 head with a PPC 112 cabinet, as I tried and tested it in the GAK recently. Can the group please outline how I would connect all these together with a variety of effects pedals? and Boss Tuner in the most effective and simplistic way.
There's another sentence.
I get a bit confused, as there are two of Eclipse.
Welcome to the Pirate or Irish podcast with Joe Branton.
Pirish.
Pirish. So what was Ross actually saying? I was spellbound by the accent.
I think he is making it more confusing than he actually wants it to be.
Okay.
Basically, I'm assuming he just wants to switch between two amps.
And also use pedals at the same time.
And also use pedals at the same time. So effectively, the AB will not give you a Y, but it will let you to go between one or the other. So clean or dirty. So effectively, if you put that at the end, it will just go guitar, AB.
All your pedals. And then,
so I would always go common pedals. So if you always want your drives to go into both, then drives AB box, and then say split into the clean amp and have your delays and modulations, and then into your dirty amp have a delay and a noise gate or something.
That's exactly how I do it. The guitarist in my band does a similar thing, but actually the bulk of his pedals are going into amp one, and then the dirty amp just has a Boss OC3 before, just after the ABY. So when he switches in that, it always has that one pedal on going into the amplifier.
You could, the effects that are assigned to just one amp, you could run in the effects loop of that amp though, couldn't you, if you wanted to?
Yeah.
So say you were running modulations or reverb or anything, you know, any sort of time-based effects, you could still run that in the effects loop of amp 2, for example.
So
it's just about finding where you want that switch to be, that AB.
Yeah.
Or an AB. I mean, I would always say get an ABY anyway. Get something like the ART call switch, because it will allow you to have both amps on at once if you want it.
Yeah.
Or one or the other. I think that makes the most sense, really, is just pop that in the chain where you want the split to occur, and then either run the pedals through one of those channels or in the effects loop of that amp. Does that make sense?
Yes.
It does.
Good. Let's do one last question. Peter says, what's the consensus on the best home practice amp? My requirements are as follows. Has to sound great with headphones. Has to have an auxiliary in. Needs a quick, intuitive interface. Light enough to move from room to room. Recording interface would be a definite bonus. I like to loop when I practice, so effects loop would be great to add a looper, but other than that, can take a drive pedal well on clean sound, so I can have the looper in front. The options I've looked at so far are Amplify, Blackstar ID Core, Yamaha THR, Fender Mustang. Right now I'm thinking the Blackstar ID15 TVP might be the best plug and play tones. My style is everything from Nile Rodgers to Eddie Van Halen. I don't need any scooped metal tones. Maybe I should hold off for the Blackstar Beam. What are we saying?
The Yamaha's the
Yamaha is good because you can send and record.
It's the only one I can think of that ticks all those boxes.
Yeah, I would say in terms of tones, I think he's hit the nail on the head saying that a Blackstar ID15 TVP would be the best, because amp wise and valve modelling wise, it's the best. It's probably the best through headphones, and you've got all the editing on USB.
No audio over USB, though.
I want to say it does, but I'm not 100%. I'm almost certain you can record with it. But I know the THR definitely does, and it does send them fire for reamping. Definitely. But the Blackstar is the better sounding of all of those, I think.
I'm going to fight the corner of the video that I did the other week of the Orange Crush.
Thought you might.
Stuff. I thought they sounded absolutely incredible. I think it hits all of the boxes. You've got recording out.
No USB out, though.
No USB out, but you do. So you would need to go in via an interface, which, you know, maybe a stumbling block. But I think they sounded real, real good. So that, or the ID Core series. I mean, I actually personally, I think I prefer the ID Core series. So the smaller version of the Blackstar amps to the TVP.
Yeah.
I think that there's, if you want something with a simple interface, I think that the standard models are I think they sound just as good. They're not as loud, obviously, but I also, from a complete idiot's point of view,
and you are idiot.
Yeah, absolutely. I don't want to sit there and change the sound of the valves. I just want to plug and play. And anything else you want to do like that, you can EQ once you've recorded. If you know, if that's what you want to do, you can put it through post production. Yeah, I mean, I really like the ID Core stuff. The ID Core 40, they do a 40, don't they? It's the big one, yeah. I think that amp is wicked. For me, the two options would be that or the orange.
I'm surprised the Yamaha didn't feature at all. I think it's the only thing that really ticks every single
box. I mean, if you're sticking to exactly what Peter has asked for, then it's got to be the THR.
I don't think it sounds as... I think if you're just playing through the amp, I don't think it sounds as good as the others.
For me, I mean, if we're talking about sound, I think the new Orange Crushes are the best sounding practice amp I've heard probably in the last 10 years.
Yeah.
They're awesome, but they don't have that direct out. They've got an audio out, like you say, and it is... it's modelled after the PPC 412, so they do sound great.
Yes.
But no USB. So there we go. It depends how important the USB is. All of the stuff that we've mentioned, you've mentioned, is light enough to cart around, like move from room to room. Pretty much everything sounds great on headphones, particularly the Orange. And I think the Yamaha and the Black Star probably sound pretty nice too.
I think they're all really good choices.
Definitely, definitely.
We haven't helped at all.
I would say it's tough to narrow that down, but it all depends on how important that USB is. For me, it's either the THR or the Orange. One last question. I know I said that was the last one, but we're going to do this with just one name each. Gavin writes in and says, "What's the worst band name you've ever been in? What's the worst band name of a band you've ever been in? Has to be your own if you have any real clangers in your closet." Joe Branton goes first.
Oh, why do I go first?
Because you have got loads.
I've got loads. But I can only pick one.
What's the worst one?
Probably Four Dead Squirrels. I mean, closely followed by Undergarment and Superheroes Anonymous.
They're awful. Matt Knight.
I was in a metal band that already had a name when I joined, and I was only 16 at the time.
God.
Called As Ruins Fall.
That is bad.
That's pretty bad.
Yeah, it's pretty bad.
Jay Cross.
For a hot minute, I thought you and me might go with the same thing.
I don't think so.
But no, I think we've both got worse ones.
Yeah.
For, I think, two gigs, me and a... In fact, it might have only been one gig. Me and a friend of mine were in a band called Kev and the Whatevs.
Oh no, you abbreviated.
Neither of us were called Kev. So both of us were the Whatevs.
I once remember seeing a band called the Daves and none of them were called Dave.
Yeah, okay.
Really bad. My first band out of school was called One Brain Short.
Yeah. Is that worse than Random Heroes?
Yeah, it's definitely worse than Random Heroes.
There's a math band that I play with called Bearded Youth Quest, and none of them have beards.
That's quite weird. Anyway, with that, let's call it a night. If you want to send us questions, please do get in touch on the Facebook group, facebook.com/groups/guitar nerds group, or on the official Facebook page, facebook.com/GAK music, or on Twitter at GAK_co_UK. And I really want everyone to start following us on the Twitter on our own personal accounts. That would be sweet. @Mark_random is me. Jay Cross, how can people find you?
You can find me on the email.
Sweet.
Which is j.cross@gak.co.uk, or alternatively, follow me on Twitter, @Mark_random.
Matt Knight, how can people get in touch with you?
You can tweet me @Mark_random, or you can email me matt.knight@gak.co.uk, and find me on the Facebook group.
Jay Cross, Joe Branton.
Yeah, you can email me on mark.packham@gak.co.uk, or you can follow me on Twitter at mark_random.
That's random with SIE on the end.
No, randomsy. Anyway, thanks very much for listening.
The first time I've never said my Twitter in
that is.
Like 98 podcasts.
@Mark_random. Right, thanks very much for listening this week. We'll see you next week. And this is episode 98, so episode 98.
Episode what?
98.
Thank you.
Goodbye.
Billy Sheehan.
Podcast, take two.
Hello.
Podcast, take two. We've all eaten a pizza.
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 There was a pizza once.
But no, it is inside of me.